Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back, listeners, to part two of this episode of Off Topic Hot Topic. If you haven't already heard it, go back and find the first half of this episode where Paul and myself have discussed all the news that's happened in the last couple of months in relation to TV and the entertainment world. Now, though, look forward to an hour and a half-ish of us talking about what we've been watching with a spoiler review and discussion about Wakanda Forever. That's Black Panther 2 at the end of this episode. Here we go.
Off topic, hot topic.
That's whatever you were talking about for you.
Paul, what have you been watching?
So, I've been watching a lot of movies.
I can tell with the list you sent me.
Yeah, and that's not even a quarter of what I've been watching, because it was the Adelaide Film Festival over the last couple of weeks, and I watched a lot. But I don't want to go through everything. I'll give you two highlights. So the first one is a film that was actually produced by the Adelaide Film Festival called Monolith that my co-host on the Swapcast podcast, Brendan, he was in the crew for. So I thought I'd go and support him and went to the premiere. Monolith is a film set in one location with one actress. She's a podcaster in the film and is investigating a creepy kind of mystery and interviewing people on her podcast, and then becomes embroiled in the mystery herself. It's a really well done film, well acted, knows its limitations. I think a lot of the times with low budget features, sometimes their reach is a bit too much and that's where they can falter, whereas this knows what they have in their arsenal and really uses it well. So I'm hoping this film will get a big release. It deserves a big release. The main actress, she's a Melbourne actress, and she's going to be in the new Evil Dead movie. So,
oh, cool.
Hopefully that will give it a bit of a traction. So, Monolith, look out for that one.
You know what might happen? I can see these things sometimes where, like, let's say that new Evil Dead movie takes off and that actor suddenly, you know, has a profile. Mm-hmm. Then they go back and go, oh, there was that thing they were in. They should release that. It's like what happened with Chris Hemsworth and Cabin in the Woods. That thing was shelved for ages. And then once he became Thor and people gave a shit about Chris Hemsworth, oh, let's put Cabin in the Woods out. So that's a scenario that might happen if it doesn't get an initial release too.
Yeah. So the other one I wanted to highlight is a film that is going to get a big release, I think at the end of this month or next month. And that's one called Triangle of Sadness. Have you guys heard of this one?
Nope. No, I have, because you told me about it, I think.
Yeah. So this is Ruben Östlin, I think his name is, the director. His previous films were Force Majeure and The Square, which were both fantastic films.
Sorry, he made The Square and now he's making Triangle of Sadness?
Yes.
Is he going to do The Pentagon of Ruin next or something? Or
it's a political theory.
Well, actually, apparently his next film is going to be about a plane where on a 15-hour flight where the entertainment service on the seats breaks down. So it's going to be set on a 15-hour flight where no one has anything to entertain themselves with, and seeing like society break down on this plane.
It's Lord of the Flies, but
yeah,
flies is spelt with a Y.
Yeah, but this film is kind of has similar themes. It's about a bunch of rich people on a yacht. I don't really want to ruin it more than that. I would just say it's a black comedy. There's one sequence in the film that had the entire cinema screaming and covering their eyes because of the gross shit that was happening, and it was hilarious. There's one scene that's between a rich Russian millionaire and a woman serving her on the pool deck that is one of the most unforgettable scenes I've ever seen. And like, as someone that has worked in a customer service capacity, like, you feel what's going on in that scene to your bones. Like, it's just so well done, and just, you feel how uncomfortable it is. You're just itching in your seat. So this film is fantastic. It is quite long. It's 2.5 hours long, but shorter than the new Black Panther. So, but this will be, I think this might be my favorite film of the year.
Wow.
So I would highly recommend watching it when it comes out, and catching up on his previous two films, Force Majeure and The Square. Force Majeure was remade a couple of years ago with Will Ferrell and Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Yes. I
didn't watch that version, but
didn't review very well.
Yeah, the original is fantastic, and The Square also has one of the most unforgettable sequences I've ever seen in a film. So,
wait, Force Majeure, is that the one about them going skiing?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then he runs away and doesn't try to save the family when there's an avalanche or whatever, yeah.
Yeah. And The Square is like a takedown of the art world, and there's a specific scene about a performance artist going to like a fundraising dinner and pretending to be a gorilla, and him progressively getting more violent, and the people at the dinner not working out where the line is between him being inappropriate and being a performance artist. And it's a work of genius. That scene alone is worth watching. So another film I saw at the festival was Bros, but that's now in wide release.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the new film by Billy Eichner, which is the first rom-com centered around a gay couple to be released as a major tentpole release by a studio. Unfortunately, nobody went and watched it, so it was a huge flop.
It's out now, is it, or it's about to be out in Australia finally?
It didn't release
at the same time as the States.
Yeah, it came out later in the States, but it's been out for weeks now. I don't know if any cinemas are still playing it.
Oh.
I think a big part of it is the poster was garbage. It was like the backs of two guys holding each other's butts. Like, I get what they were going for, but it's not a poster that people are going to go, I need to watch that film.
Because the trailer made it look so good. I was really excited. Like the trailer. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they just screwed the marketing of this thing. But it is so good. It is a top-tier romantic comedy, laughed from beginning to end. And the best thing about it, it's a queer film. Every single cast member in the film is queer. And you can tell it was written for queer people by queer people. It doesn't pander to straights, but because of that, it's funnier and more authentic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think straight people will find it entertaining as well. But it's not, you know, when you just feel when something's not written for the people that it's actually about, this is definitely not that. So if you haven't seen Bros and it's still playing where you are, like, go watch it and go support it. It's a real shame, because the way that Hollywood works, they're not going to make this film and release it in cinemas ever again.
Like, that's the problem, is it now feels like it'll be another 5 years until something like this is attempted, as opposed to being potentially, like, if it had been a hit, then it could have been the start of sort of like more of these sorts of things.
Yeah.
And now it just like gets pushed like, no one's going to go see a gay rom-com anymore. Or no one, the audience doesn't want to see a gay rom-com until someone finally gets around to trying it again in 5 years, basically. It's just, it sucks that that's the case. And that it probably is a marketing problem, not a quality of the film problem.
Yeah. This could have been the Bridesmaids for gay movies.
Totally. Yeah. Absolutely.
I also wanted to highlight a couple of really good streaming movies. So the first one is one that came out last month on Disney Plus called Rosaline. Have either of you guys seen this one or heard of it?
I haven't. It's who is the who's the main actress in it?
I've forgotten it. Caitlin Dever. She just like was nominated for the Emmy for something.
Yeah,
and it's in the new Julia Roberts movie as well.
It's about the character of Rosalind from Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah. Yes. So So this is basically about Rosalind, who was Juliet.
Is it Rosalind or Rosalind? Because Rosalind's a character in a more than one Shakespeare play.
As You Like It.
It could be Rosalind. I'm bad with my pronunciations, but
and I'm not.
it's about Kate Moss.
That was a pronunciation problem.
Juliet's cousin, she's dating Romeo, well, kind of secretly dating Romeo, and then he kind of ditches her for Juliet, and then it's about her trying to break up Romeo and Juliet. And it's obviously set inside the Shakespeare play, but the dialogue is very of our time, and it kind of has that a Knight's Tale vibe to it.
You just got the Gordas brothers.
It's funny how that just made just that little bit in my brain just went, what? You said Knight's Tale?
Yeah.
You love that movie, bro.
It's kind of like a rom-com Knight's Tale set in the Romeo Juliet universe.
Knight's Tale is a rom-com.
Well, it is. No.
It's a sports movie first.
Yeah. Yes. I would agree with that. So it's really charming, really fun. It does the Knight's Tale thing as well, where it's in-universe, they're playing modern songs, but in their way. And, it's just if you want like a light, fun rom-com, with really good performances, I would highly recommend this one.
What's it on, sorry?
Disney Plus. Cool. In America, it's in Hulu. Mm-hmm. Australia, Disney Plus.
Cool. Stars.
That does sound... I'm interested, put it that way. It sounds cool.
Yeah. And the other one I wanted to highlight was a film called Drifting Home on Netflix. Have either of you guys seen this one?
No. Not even heard of it.
We
but that
never
being
know
said,
the stuff you talk about, Paul, until you tell us.
I also, it's living on Netflix. I honestly just don't even click on the Netflix app much anymore. Go on.
Yeah. So this is a new
anime. The Crown. You need to watch The Crown. Sorry, go on.
Yeah. So this is a new anime film. I have a bit of a spotty record with the Netflix original animes. Mm. Some of them have been pretty average. This is the first one where I've watched where I was like, oh, okay, this deserved a theatrical release. So it's about a bunch of kids that go to a haunted, abandoned apartment block. Mm-hmm. And while they're in there, a giant storm hits. And when it passes, they realize that the apartment block is now drifting in the middle of the ocean. They don't know how it's gotten there. So it's a mystery of like, why are they suddenly in the middle of the ocean, and other buildings that they know pass them by, and they have to like get supplies, and it becomes kind of like a survival movie, but it's about the relationships with all the kids. Kind of has that kind of Spirited Away vibe of like kids in a supernatural situation where they don't know how they got there, and working out the rules of the universe that they've found themselves in. Like great characters, beautiful musical score. The animation is stunning. I think it's flown under the radar, and I think people really need to discover it. So the animation studio that made it, all their other films were released theatrically. I think the last one they did was Penguin Highway, which I saw in the cinemas. Drifting Home on Netflix.
Cool.
something I'd highly recommend.
Awesome. I know you're a big IMAX fan. There's no IMAX in South Australia. Did you know there was a release of Evangelion Rebuild 3.0 plus 1.0 at IMAX?
Yeah.
Friends of ours were trying to organize to go and see it. I just could not make it happen.
Damn.
That could have been very cool.
Anime on the IMAX sounds cool.
Doesn't it? Particularly Evangelion. That actually might have been more incomprehensible. That some of the action in that film towards the end of that film was just great.
Yeah.
What else have you been watching?
Okay, so there's something I'm going to admit that might get me.
Holy shit. I can see what's on coming up and I. Oh, yeah. Holy shit. Holy shit.
So this might
this
get me,
coupled like, with your upload opinions, yeah, you're about to be cancelled, mate.
Yeah, this might get me cancelled from the gay community.
And Australia. In general. What do you got left, Paul?
But until last week, I had never watched Kath and Kim.
Oh my fucking God.
You fucking what?
I don't know why it's never been a thing I watched, but until now, I had never watched it. Obviously, I
wonder
if
the sense of humor is broken. Never saw anything funny before.
I was exposed to like the famous lines, like "Look at me" and all that kind of stuff.
Boy.
But, yeah. But this weekend coming, there's a new reunion special, and my friends were like, let's do a thing. Like, do you want to host it? I'm like, sure. And then I'm like, fuck, I've never actually watched it.
That's funny. That's amazing.
So I have been
I love
furious.
How they just assume you must have seen all
yes.
of it.
Yes. Because it's always been
every Australian has seen it.
Yeah, because it's always been a thing. People would like quote it around me and stuff. I'm like, yeah.
This is Paul's Anchorman.
yeah.
I'm just thinking of Jamie and The Simpsons. Yeah, go on.
So basically, I've been furiously binging it. I'm up to season 4 as of
today. Stop. You've gone too far.
Well, I've watched the first 2 episodes of season 4 and
turn around.
And I was like,
go back.
Is it just me or is this not good as
it's
good
shit.
Anymore? Yeah.
Shit,
because it went to channel 7.
And they were past it. It's like it
but
was.
But you do, what is like, you have to watch though, is the American version of it. It is.
Yeah.
I'm joking. That's a joke. Don't do that.
This is an Arrested Development situation. There are 3 seasons and only 3 seasons. And the other seasons do not count. Don't worry about it.
There's season 4 and then there seems to be season 5 seems to be like recap episodes.
Yeah. So for those who don't understand, the Kath and Kim was on the ABC, which is like
BBC.
BBC, it's like our government sort of like public broadcaster, right? Cult hit. Because it got so big, the creators were able to sell the concept of Kath and Kim to a commercial station in Channel 7 who then took over, and the soul was ripped from the show once it went to Channel 7. Like it is a husk of itself. I've tried multiple times to watch season 4. It is impossible to watch. It is so bad. Just stop watching.
So have you tried like the subsequent seasons? Because like I think season 5, from the looks of it, looking at the Netflix, so
season 5 I think is mostly just like
recaps.
It's like this is the, it's like not even recaps, it's like clip specials, like episodes where the fashion episode where it just shows them when they do like the Melbourne Cup episode or when they're like dressed up for the wedding and stuff like that.
But then season 6 seems to be like 45 minute episodes.
Yeah, they're movies.
Specials.
It's
there
like
were
movies,
a couple
movies.
Of movies,
yeah.
Which
well,
are
like Kath and Kim to Code and stuff.
The Kath to Kim Code, I think it is.
The Kath and Kim Code.
The Kath and Kim Code?
Yeah.
That's not bad.
It doesn't
bad.
Make any sense, the title, but it's pretty good.
It's not bad. It was probably where it was. You could tell the show was done. I think it was the last thing that was done with the ABC, basically.
So is that what you should watch after 3?
I think so. I think that's the one you should watch. And then there was the movie, which
Kath and Kim Durella.
Which I don't think I've actually ever watched. Let me put it this way. If your reason for watching Kath and Kim is to catch up so you can be on top of it for your special watch that you're doing this weekend, you've already done the work.
Okay.
Realistically, the quotable moments, The bits that people give a shit about have already gone, but you've watched them all now. You don't need to watch anymore.
Okay.
Good the to work know, is done.
It's been consuming my life at the moment is all I do. Like, I dream about Kath and Kim because literally every waking moment I'm watching it at the moment. So
A, I can't believe you set yourself this ridiculous task. It's fucking hilarious. B, as someone who's coming to this 20-odd years after everybody else watched it for the first time, how are you finding it?
I like it.
I'm glad.
It's good. Like, I laugh quite a bit. I can see why it's become such a cultural touchstone. Like,
I think it's even better on the rewatch. I think rewatching it as an adult, sure. A bit like The Simpsons, I remember there was like an age where suddenly the Simpsons jokes I never got as a kid started to make sense.
Yeah.
Kathy Kim's not quite as witty as The Simpsons can be in the original years. But even just on the rewatch, I just appreciate some of the early stuff more. I adore it. If an episode from the first three seasons of Kath and Kim is on, I will watch the whole thing and probably watch the next two as well. It is very, very easy watch. And as you said, a cultural touchstone in this country.
Yeah.
I'm glad you've finally seen it.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So, in terms of new stuff that I'll be watching...
I will say, just before we move on, I am not anticipating that this reunion special is going to be any good.
I agree.
The fact that Channel 7 made the awful season, mm-hmm. and I think they're the ones who are also making this special mm-hmm. where... It does not feel like they're doing this out of a feeling of, we've got more Kath and Kim to tell, but let's use this opportunity to make some money. Which, you know, all power to them, but I don't think it's going to be good.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
I hope I'm wrong.
The good thing is I'm doing it, like, with a bunch of friends, so it'll be fun. We'll just be able to bitch about it. Mm-hmm. So, in terms of new shows I've been watching, a new one that's on Disney Plus in Australia... I think it might be... Yeah, it is Hulu in America. Mm-hmm. Reboot. Have you guys watched any of this?
Haven't watched it, but I've watched the trailer and and the concept was always a bit interesting and the cast is very good. Yeah. And the trailer quite sold it to me, but I haven't got around to watching it yet, no.
Yeah, so this is the new show from the makers of Modern Family and it stars Keegan-Michael Key and Johnny Knoxville and Judy Greer. Paul Reiser. Like, it's a fantastic cast. Fantastic cast. And it's about a 90s sitcom that was cancelled, or early 2000s sitcom that was cancelled, and they decide to reboot it back and bring back all the original cast. And it's one of those kind of meta shows about the TV industry. There's a lot of jokes about, like, the way that streaming works and what they green light and all that kind of stuff. I've had a really good time with the show. I think it's really funny, and especially for people like us that watch mm-hmm. and analyze TV a lot, I think there's a lot to appreciate there. Yeah. And it's a very easy watch. It's like a 20-minute sitcom. So, very easy sitcom to watch. So
is its appraisal of that, of like modern media, not just consumption but production, biting? Is it sharp? Is it like accurate, or is it a bit soft?
Don't expect anything too biting.
Okay,
it's
okay.
Still a pretty fluffy sitcom.
Okay,
in the end of the day, it is by the makers of Modern Family.
Fair enough. So, good to know. Set my expectations at an appropriate level. Thank you, Paul. I appreciate that.
Think Modern Family with swearing and sex jokes.
Have you watched any of Blockbuster yet? I know you were anticipating it very highly.
I was, and I didn't make it through the first episode.
Neither did Damask. She told me she couldn't make it to the first episode either.
There's That's something amazing. About, like... It felt like people watched Brooklyn Nine-Nine and tried to imitate the cadence of the jokes, but they didn't have the skill set to do it.
You can't manufacture that stuff. Like, I mean, you can. Obviously, yeah. That's exactly what they did with Brooklyn Nine-Nine. They manufactured it and turned into a product. Yeah. But what I mean is, it's like it has to come from something genuine. It can't just be, yeah, wow.
Yeah, there was just something missing. The pacing was off.
Ooh.
The performances weren't there. And it kind of, like, the appeal of setting something in a blockbuster should have been just to set it when people went to blockbusters.
Yes. That was a bit in the trailer I realized it was set modern day. I was like, that's a mistake.
I'm this pretty sure to be a period I said piece. This on the last episode, that it doesn't make any sense. It should definitely be set it should be in a period like early piece. 2000s.
Because, you know, you even watch a film like Clerks, and you see the videos on the shelf and their movies you recognize and the posters on the wall and movies you recognize. And this doesn't have that. It's all fake shit everywhere. It just doesn't feel like a genuine video store. Like, as someone who managed a video store, it just felt yucky. Like, you don't appropriate my workplace in this way. Like, yeah, no.
That's such a shame. It's... Have you ever thought to, like, skip ahead and, like, watch, like, a mid-season episode instead? Because pilots are notoriously difficult, especially for sitcoms. Sometimes it takes a while for the chemistry to start really hitting and for the, you know, for the actors and the writers to find their pace.
Unless there was, like, amazing reviews coming out for this thing, I don't think, like, in 2022, when there's, like, 10 billion shows to watch, you don't grab me in that first episode, like, next thing, please. Yeah.
See, I had that with Schitt's Creek, and everyone says it's an amazing show, but I couldn't get past the first couple episodes.
That's it, but you've got the amazing reviews to tell you that you should get through.
Yeah, 100%.
So, another show that I've been watching on Paramount Plus is one of the rare reboots that I was excited for, which was the Beavis and Butthead reboot. Were either of you guys fans of Beavis and Butthead back in the day?
No, I was more of a Daria fan than a Beavis and Butthead fan.
I was definitely more of a Daria fan as well, but I enjoyed Beavis and Butthead.
It was like a Cartoon Network show, right? We didn't really have access.
No, it was an MTV show, man. MTV.
Oh, even then, MTV. Right? We didn't have any access to that sort of stuff.
Beavis and Butthead would have been accessible here somehow.
It used to be. I remember for sure it was on Channel 10 at 11 o'clock at night.
There you go.
Yeah, on a weekday. So unless you were up
late. Liam was watching Scrubs.
Yeah. I was.
I was watching Buffy.
Yeah. So new Beavis and Butthead, it doesn't reinvent the wheel. It's still them being Beavis and Butthead. probably the biggest change to the format is, I don't know if you guys ever remember, they used to have segments during the episodes where Beavis and Butthead would be sitting on the couch watching a music video and just kind of reacting to it.
Sure.
Like the origin of reaction videos, really. They still do that, but now they also watch, like, YouTube videos. It's funny. It works. I'm really enjoying it. I love the animation style of the Mike Judge stuff, like King of the Hill and Daria and Beavis and Butthead. They've all got a very distinct style. It's nice seeing it back on screen. So
I had a client tell me today they've just started watching King of the Hill. Okay.
Yeah.
Now's the time, I guess.
Weirdly, I had a conversation about it today.
Yeah, it just landed on Disney Plus. That's why a lot of people are starting to get into it.
This client said it was because they'd finished all of... They were waiting for new episodes of Bob's Burgers. And I was like, I can see why you went to King of the Hill. I think there is some shared DNA there.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So Binge in Australia has finally added seasons 2 and 3 of Harley Quinn.
I absolutely fucking have.
Yeah, so I've been...
Wait a second, did we talk about that in our last episode? Did I mention that? I think I must have brought it up somewhere.
You brought it up that it was just added, but none of us had a chance to
watch
it yet.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, so I haven't watched all of it yet.
Neither have I.
but I've watched the majority of season two, and I'm fucking loving it. This show is fantastic.
There is more than a few people who have said it's their favorite show, on TV at the moment, Harley Quinn.
It's so good. It's funny, and I'm invested emotionally in the characters at this point and their romantic entanglements, which becomes a big thing in season two. Have you watched any of it, Liam?
I watched the first season here and there when Brob was watching it originally, because we lived together in the same house, and I really enjoyed what I saw. But I never sat down and watched it from the start, no.
So how much of season two have you gotten through?
Oh, I meant to say I haven't watched none of it yet, but I'm going to.
Okay. Yeah, you got to do it.
I'll get there. I will. I've got to get through House of the Dragon. I've got to get through Andor. I need to get there. There's just so much television, Paul. And I don't know how the fuck you watch so much of it.
Well, I don't understand. But the thing is, I feel like you watch more than me.
I mean,
no, I think it's just that
we're all watching different things.
I think that's part of it.
Because, House of the Dragon, I gave up after one episode, just say. And I find, all these half-an-hour shows are a lot easier to fit
That's
into
true.
Your day.
Yeah, yeah.
But you'll end up finally, watching more of them, weirdly.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I'll sit down and watch one episode of this, and you watch eight episodes.
But that's not... Apart from this, week of Kath and Kim that I've been having, all these shows, I only ever watch, an episode at a time. I'll tell you
what my downfall has been. My downfall is YouTube. My downfall is Twitch, because when I can't be bothered, because when I want to watch a show, that's one of the biggest things that this podcast has done. It's poisoned me. Is when I watch a show, I need to watch it to pay attention to it, because I'm going to talk about it on this, or I'm going to make a review of it. So I have to be engaged with it. So a lot of the time, what happens is it gets to a point in the evening where, or I'm doing something else, I just need something on the background. And so I pop on a Twitch streamer,
Carl Bossman.
Carl Bossman. I'll watch an old recording of his or something like that. And it can just be on in the background and I don't have to think about it. And that has destroyed my TV watching diet, if that makes sense. I blame the podcast, because it's changed how I fundamentally interact with television.
So finally, I know I've waffled on for ages, but finally...
It's only been 45 minutes. It's fine, Paul.
Star Trek Lower Decks, which I'm also watching on Paramount Plus. I've kind of cut away from all the other Star Trek shows, and this is the one that I'm left watching, and I think it's a lot of fun. It's a half an hour sitcom version of Star Trek, it's funny. The kind of Star Trek mission storylines are actually fun and engaging.
How many seasons are there now?
So I'm currently watching the third season.
Cool.
And they're only short seasons as well. So the animation style is very similar to Rick and Morty, that kind of thing. But it's not as crass as that. It kind of is more in the spirit of Star Trek. Still not family friendly, but really fun show. So if you want another half hour kind of fun sci-fi comedy, Star Trek Lower Decks.
Speaking of Rick and Morty, has anyone watched the first half of the most recent season?
Yes.
It came
out
a while back. Oh, okay. I haven't.
There's some really fun episodes in
it. Yeah, some really good episodes. A couple of the episodes it's very smart still. And yeah.
Did some it episodes, not do so much, a lot? But... Where the previous season ended was kind of a big deal. Have they done much with that?
They've mainly made jokes about it, them not doing anything with it.
Yeah.
Oh.
But in a good way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Not in a She-Hulk finale way, in
Yeah.
In a Rick and Morty way.
In a Rick and Morty way. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Liam, what have you been watching?
So throughout this episode, because I got told about this 10 minutes before this, I also ended up writing down a few other things that I'm going to talk about.
Fuck. Okay. Go on.
I'll be quick about them. I'm always quick about them. I'll just go through the list here. our mother.
Yes.
showed me a show when I'm and visited her recently called, it was on Channel 10. It's an Australian show. There's a UK version coming apparently very soon. Mm-hmm. It's called The Traitors. It's a reality show. It's literally a 10 episode game of Werewolf, the card game Werewolf.
Mm-hmm.
And it was thrilling to watch. I was so invested in it.
Do you know who the werewolf is?
You know the whole time who the werewolves are.
The whole time. Cool, cool, cool.
So this starts with 24 people, and on the first night, four people get told that they are the traitors, and everyone else is faithful, and the faithfuls have to figure out who the traitor is.
So it's Among Us, the TV show.
But every episode, that everyone can vote on who they think a traitor is, and at night, the traitors murder a faithful.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's... It is fun to watch. It's like there was a group chat between mum, me, and our sister Kelly about this on watching the finale last night.
Oh wow!
Just throwing out theories about how we think it's going to go and blah 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 blah. It's very good. What's his name? Roger from Doctor or whatever. You know, the main character. He's the host, and he's charming and funny enough for it. But like, it's all real people. But a lot of them are like. Forensic investigators and the guy who is the journalist who was captured and held hostage overseas and then got traded back. He's on there and he's one of the traitors from the first episode. Wow. But he doesn't tell anybody who he is. He doesn't explain because he works in hostage negotiations and stuff now.
Wow.
And he's very, very good at it. It's on 10 Play if you're in Australia. There's a British version coming. I'm definitely going to watch that because British do everything great. I honestly really suggest it. It's very digestible and you don't have to pay too much attention to it while you're watching it, but it's very fun.
Did anyone watch The Mole, the new series of The Mole?
Yeah, I watched the new series of The Mole. Yeah, I figured out who it was in the first episode.
Oh. Was it good though?
It was okay. It was unsatisfying to me. Okay. But it was set in Australia, but Americans, which is weird. It was filmed in Queensland and Sydney. And they're like, we're in the Queensland outback and blah, blah, blah. And it was okay. I watched the whole thing, so I guess I must have been interested. But I think I enjoy more knowing who the traitors and the mole are.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the show, because you get to see both sides of it and like what people are doing and how they're doing it and how they're going about it. It's more interesting to me than The Mole.
Gotcha.
few things on TV. So I got a 7-day trial to Paramount Plus because I wanted to watch something else. Halo. I'll mention later. No, I did say that earlier, didn't I? When I was like, let's get Paramount Plus to watch Halo, and I've never watched it. but I ended up watching the first episode of The Rehearsal recently with Nathan Field as The Rehearsal.
Yes. Yeah. So good.
And I watched the first episode. I really enjoyed it, but I'm like, I feel like I need to watch Nathan For You, first because it's his previous show. Mm-hmm. And this weekend I literally watched every episode of Nathan For You. I binged the whole thing. It is so good. I'd never seen it before.
Fantastic.
It is fantastic. It's funny. And where it ends up is so heartfelt. And it's just, I didn't expect to feel things watching this show because, you know, it starts off very, you know, making fun of people. But then it gets to this point of this real heartfeltness and lovely. Like the last two episodes in particular are really great because I love a true crime thing. And it feels very much like that. What they do with it, with someone who's popped up throughout the whole first four seasons, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. I really, really enjoyed it. I'm really excited. And it also, you can see where the idea for The Rehearsal came from that last season. It very much draws on things he does in that season. It's very, very good. Very good. So if you haven't watched Nathan For You...
Can you explain Nathan For You to people who
Nathan
don't know?
Nathan For You is, he's a business major who... graduated from college with okay grades, and he goes to small businesses to help them help their business. So he'll come up with some ridiculous idea on how to help a business. So, for instance, he goes to like a burger joint who But then but in order to back up his ideas, he gets further and further into a deeper hole, trying to like cover his tracks so he doesn't get caught doing the wrong thing. So it's like at one point he's like, I need to make, I need to help this cafe get more press. So he has the idea of getting a celebrity to leave a big tip. So he hires a celebrity impersonator who is supposed to be Kramer from Seinfeld to leave a tip, but on the receipt it's going to say his name, his card and his name. So he tries asking random people with the name Michael Richards if they'll let him use their card, but he'll give them the $10,000 that he's going to leave a tip, but no one says yes. So he finds someone to legally change their name, but in order to change a name in America for some reason, you have to publicly announce you're doing it four times in a month in a newspaper. So he starts his own newspaper so they can publicize that he gets a ghostwriter. It's just this massive thing just in order to help this cafe have Michael Richards comes and leaves a massive tip. It's very, very, very funny. It's very good. And everyone, I just don't know if everyone is real or not in the show. It's very hard to tell. It's so good. It's so good. I very much suggest everyone watch Nathan For You. It's cringy.
Where can you watch it again?
Paramount Plus.
Paramount Plus, okay.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, I'd black that up. I've been a stan for years. That show is a work of genius, and the rehearsal is also a work of genius.
Well, the first episode of the rehearsal was amazing, and I needed to watch. I need to go back now and watch the rest of the rehearsal.
Because and you won't predict where the season goes.
Like, yeah, you can never predict what he's going to do in the show. It's,
yeah.
It's brilliant. The reason that I got Paramount Plus, though, was I wanted to watch the stand-up special from Michelle Brazier, mm-hmm. Her stand-up special, Average Bear. For anyone who might know who Michelle Brazier is, she's an Australian comedian. She does a lot of stuff with Auntie Donna. She's like the nurse in the school nurse.
Yeah.
That they all come in and do ridiculous things towards. her show is called Average Bear, and I had never seen it because I really wanted to see it at the Comedy Festival, but I never got a chance to. It is beautiful. It's very funny, but also really heartfelt, and it got me in a way that I didn't expect to. I'm not going to tell you why.
So it's a post Nanette stand-up special is what I'm hearing.
Well, she's a musical comedian, so she sings a lot. And she tells stories about her life and also sings. It's very, very good. I suggest everybody watch that. There's a whole bunch of these Australian stand-up specials that have just come out in Paramount Plus, and they're all edited by Stupid Old Studios, who do a lot of stuff with Auntie Donna and all that kind of thing. They're a really cool agency and studio in Melbourne, actually. But yeah, they just released that. Very, very good. On the same sort of wavelength is that there's just recently the episodes have just started coming out. There's a new web series called The Future of Everything, which a friend of mine is actually the animator or the creator. He got a bunch of funding from Screen Australia. It's based on his web comics he just releases on Instagram. He just got a bunch of money, and it's animated and with a whole bunch of Australian like comedians and stuff as doing the voices. Other friends of mine did actually the sound design on it. It's very funny. The first episode just came out. It's called
this is what you've been watching. This is what your friends have been making.
Yeah, sure. It's called, but no, everyone should watch this though. It's called Unlimited Ducks is the first episode. It's like a 7-minute thing.
Sure.
And it's the idea is that scientists find proof that the world is a simulation, and then trolls on the internet decide to hack the simulation and figure out the cheat code to get unlimited ducks and where that goes. It's very, very, very funny. You can just watch it on Instagram or YouTube, and it's great. Cool. And there's new episodes coming out each week. There's so like six episodes.
It's an animated comedy.
Animated comedy, yeah.
Cool.
Again, on the same, this is not a friend of mine. This is another web series that everyone should watch. It's a comedy investigative journalism show called Finding Yeezus, which is two Australian comedians are searching for the person who made a internet newgrounds game in the 2000s called Kanye 3030, Kanye 3030. And there's this whole big thing about it that it could be a recruitment tool for a cult called Ascensionism, and they're trying to find who created the game and find out if this Ascensionism cult is a real thing. It's like 6 episodes. It's all on YouTube. The guys who have done it have also done a couple of podcasts, one called Finding Drogo, which is about them finding the author of a fan fiction book that was released about Drago, from who is the bad guy in Rocky 3, Rocky 4. Mm-hmm. That goes in a whole other direction. It's really, really funny. The second one's called Finding Desperado, which is about trying to find the guy who has a Guinness World Record for the being the youngest person to ever make a feature film at the age of 13. And then finding that guy. And so they're really interesting, really in-depth investigative journalism, but also very funny. And that's also produced, that show Funny Years is also produced by the guys from Auntie Donna, because they find out that there might be
come back full circle.
This is what I've done. That's how I got back. I remembered watching it. In the first episode, they find out that the creator of the game could be someone from Ballarat, which is very close to Melbourne. And they have one friend in common on Facebook with this person, and it is Mark from Auntie Donna. So they get him in and they try and find the guy. It's very, very good. Very good. and last two things. I'm jumping now to Disney Plus. I'm speeding through this. Okay.
Yep.
Welcome to Wrexham. I don't know if I mentioned this last time. It's the Disney Plus docuseries about...
I don't remember if you mentioned it last time or not, but yeah, go on.
Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney, Rob McElhenney is creator of Always Sunny Philadelphia, Mythic Quest. He plays Mac, and also the lead character in Mythic Quest.
Mm-hmm. Which a new season of that's just dropped recently, I think.
Yes, it has just dropped, yeah. So they bought a Welsh soccer club in Wales called Wrexham Dragons, I think. And it's about them buying this club and trying to get them deregulated into the higher into the National League or something. But it's not just about that. It's very much about Wrexham and the people who, the supporters of Wrexham and the town of Wrexham and what the club means to it. It's really lovely, but also quite funny because it's Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds. I suggest it's really easy to watch. Some episodes are very short. Some episodes are maybe like 40 minutes or so long, but it's very good. It's all up there on Disney Plus. I suggest everyone watch that as well.
Does it make you want to be a soccer fan?
A little bit. Not so much that I'm going to... I actually have now started looking up their games because I'm interested to see what's happening with them. Not to the point of, say, our friend Joel, who's now apparently a soccer fan because of this show.
Which I find very funny. Like, I like that Joel is so affected by it that he wants to become a soccer fan.
Yeah.
I haven't watched this series, but I get the sense that it's probably doing a really good look at looking what it means for people to care about a sport team.
Exactly, yeah.
At which point, I want to suggest to Joel, you already follow Geelong. Just get invested in the AFL, mate.
No, just it's jump like, on the bandwagon. It's a lot closer.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly. You've already got... They just won the premiership in Australia, mate. It's a perfect time to jump on. He's not even that far from Geelong. He basically is halfway to Geelong where he lives.
Just dox him on your website, on your podcast.
It's not quite doxing. Like you get involved with your local fan base.
I've heard that show described as like a documentary version of Ted Lasso.
Yes.
It's quite funny. At one point, Jason Sudeikis comes to watch one of the games. And they're like, oh, it's that guy. it's really, really good. You learn a lot more about Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney and their experience with sport as well, and like how their dads brought them into sport and their feelings about that. It's super lovely, very funny, but also really heartfelt. And you learn not just about the players, you learn about the people who own the pub next to the stadium, the people that just go, like the major fans. And it's really great. I really, really enjoyed it. Lastly,
stand by my assessment that loving a sport and particularly a club is basically a religion.
Oh, 100%. And you see that in this. Yeah, it's like, yeah. It's just... And they also don't shy away from like the hooligan side of it either and talk about where that came from and like the issues with that. And they interview a guy who is banned from the stadium and stuff because he started a fight or whatever. And the, yeah, how that evolved into what it is. It's, they very much want to show the whole, the whole view of it. And I really hope that there's another season of that coming out because I want to know.
I think they may have already greenlit that, a second season.
That's fantastic. Memory. In the same way that like Drive to Survive got me really interested into F1, I'm dedicated to a team now. Like, not so much with Welcome to Wrexham.
Wrexham sucks.
They started well. Shut up.
Ferrari, no good. Liam jumps on the bandwagon and the wheels fall off.
Yeah, that's literally. No, I'm pretty sure a wheel fell off. although it did get us an answer in trivia where we got an extra 3 points. That's true. You're welcome. We won beer. And the very last thing I want to talk about is also on Disney Plus, and we all talk about it. And it's not finished yet, but Andor. I am fucking loving this show. It is the best thing to come out of Star Wars in a very long time. If you aren't watching Andor, Broderick,
I am watching it. I'm just behind.
Same. I'm behind. I actually watched 3 episodes the other night. I'm very much enjoying it.
It is exactly what it needed to be. It's just about regular people in this highly in this Star Wars world in the middle of the reign, the peak of the reign of the Empire. And it's about the rebellion. It's about the real people living on planets and how they're affected by it. It's about the people working in the Empire. It is so good, and there's not one fucking Jedi in it, and it is the best thing about it. It's one of the best things
about
the show.
Are you going to be pissed off if a Jedi shows up in the finale?
Yes.
Yeah, well, okay.
But who's going to show up in the final?
Tears
Mace
in.
Windu. No. It doesn't make any sense, though, for that to happen. It's set itself up in a specific place for it to not be that.
Mm-hmm.
The way they're doing it is every 3 episodes is basically a small arc within the story.
Yes.
So,
which is really cool. It's weird that they're not releasing them 3 episodes at a time.
Well, because they did that with the first 3 episodes.
Yes.
It's just so bloody good. I suggest everyone watch it. Even if you're not a Star Wars fan, honestly, I think you could watch this show without being a Star Wars fan and really enjoy it for what it's doing. It's the great political stuff that you get from things like Game of Thrones, but also in this Star Wars world and this sci-fi world. It's just, I can't speak highly enough of it. There's still 3 episodes left to go, so I can't tell you if it ends well, but you know, another season, because they've greenlit 24 episodes, 2 seasons, 12 episode seasons, and apparently it's supposed to end.
It's only going to be 2 seasons.
Yeah, it's supposed to end basically exactly when
Rogue One starts.
You meet Andor in Rogue One.
Cool.
So that's super cool.
To what we were saying before, though, I think this is a show that you do have to get through. Like, I wasn't hooked in the first couple of episodes.
I agree. It's such a slow burn. No, I agree with Paul. It's a real slow burn. It's not that it was bad. It just, like, it was so methodical. Nothing really exciting or, like, grab your attention or grab your... intrigue
was a lot of
happening.
Place setting.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
It was
I can see that.
It wasn't.
It's probably why they released the first 3 episodes at
once. I'm sure it is, because the third episode is really good. And the third episode pays off the build up of the first two. Mm-hmm. But those first two had to. Yeah. They needed the third episode. They just weren't on their own, weren't particularly engaging until the third episode, and then the payoff made them worthwhile. So it does take
a
little bit.
How far into it are you both?
I've only seen one more episode past that so far.
Oh my god.
I think I've watched 7 episodes.
Oh, great. So
yeah.
Prison?
Not yet. No, the not last yet. One I watched was the thing in the sky.
Oh, right. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
The next 3 episodes are really great, and there's somebody, I can't, this is not a big spoiler, but Andy Serkis is in in it, and he is brilliant. He's finally getting...
playing a young Snoke, right? That's what he's there for?
No. No, not at all. He's playing...
He had to go no online makeup. To explain that people's like, don't get fucking your theory started. I'm not playing fucking Snoke. It's not what this is.
He's fantastic in it. He gets to really showcase his range and his... just the things he never gets to really show very often because he's always behind mocap or whatever. Mm. Like he is such a good actor, and he's so great in this. And yeah, it's I can't get enough of it. And that's the end of my list, everyone. I did it.
You did have She-Hulk on your list. Did you have something you want to say about She-Hulk, Liam? Or
I can't remember.
Okay, of course.
There was a reason that you brought it up that. Oh, your episode of She-Hulk.
Oh, you want to promote our podcast? Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. So I only got halfway through it, but I got through She-Hulk somehow. So
look, I didn't hate She-Hulk. I definitely understand all the issues you had.
I agree.
And some of them were I had the same amount of issue with it, but I did want to bring it up. For one reason is that you were like lukewarm on Madison.
Yeah.
Madison is a fucking amazing character and I will not hear anything else.
No wonder you're an Upload fan. Just while we're talking about Andor as well, we will be reviewing that on Hunting Seasons in a couple of weeks. House of the Dragons next week and then Andor the week after, which is pretty much in line, I think, with the end of the series. So,
well, with House of the Dragon, right, I finished that and that got way better than I... Last time I was on here, I was talking about the differences between House of Dragon and Rings of Power. And I loved Rings of Power, and there's a three-hour episode of Hunting Seasons where Brod basically says everything that I thought. And I was lukewarm on House of Dragon, but I very much enjoyed where it got to. But I don't think it was as good as Rings of Power. Anyway.
Cool. All right. What I've been watching. Drag Race UK Season 4. Have you been watching this, Paul?
Yeah, I'm up to date.
How are you finding it so far?
I am loving this season.
I think it's a very good season so far.
It's a very strong group of queens. There's been some eliminations where there's been some... eliminations where I was really upset because some queens I love have gone.
How far back was the last time you're upset a queen went?
The last elimination.
The last one. The last elimination. Yes, because there was a non-elimination. Correct.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I agree. I was very upset by that elimination. Very upset. Yeah. As were the other queens who were left behind who were like, yeah, I don't think it was their time to go. That was
upsetting. I think all the challenges this season have been really fun. The only two that felt painful to watch was the Snatch Game, which was terrible, and this week's...
I didn't like this week's one much at all.
This week's acting challenge was fucking terrible.
I agree. It was bad.
Yeah.
But not like comparing it to like the latest season or either season of Drag Race Down Under... they're worlds apart in terms of quality. The quality of the queens and the quality of the challenges, I think. And the quality of the fashion.
Yeah.
There is no comparison.
Yeah. Though I have to say I did go see all the queens from Drag Race Down Under Season 1 and 2. Did a tour and I went and all saw them. Oh, it was kind of like a revolving...
Sure.
Each state got a different group of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a fun show. So
I'm sure it was fun. It's a badly made show.
Yeah.
But Drag Race UK Season 4 has been good so far. Yes, Liam.
I just love how I get to have a power nap in this section because I've never watched
this. This is a very mini reality check where I get to just talk about Drag Race, the only reality show I watch.
Reality check.
Taskmaster Series 14. Listen.
I'm awake again.
What can I say about Taskmaster that I haven't said before? The show is still excellent. It's another group of five great contestants, half of which I've never heard of before, but now I'm big fans of. Fern Brady, at the very least, I'm now a fan of.
So funny.
Sarah Milliken, I think, has been my standout, though. I am desperate for her to win. I've always been a fan of hers. She's a comedian I've wanted to see at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival a bunch of times, and I always seem to miss out for some reason, or she stopped coming. And so it's
hopefully
been great
she comes back now that COVID's sort of...
Yeah, maybe. So she's been great on it, as has Dara Breen. It's still like just a slice of happiness every week. I love it. I get 20 weeks of it a year, and maybe an extra bonus one at the end of the year. I'm a happy boy when Taskmaster's on, basically. And Taskmaster Australia starts next year, and Liam does not like the choice of Taskmaster, which is fine, but I do like the group of celebrities and comedians they've chosen. Yeah. It's a really stacked cast. Like, they've chosen good Australian comedians, which gives me hope that it'll be good too. So I'm looking forward to watching the Australian
Taskmaster. I've simmered down on my hatred for the Taskmaster, Tom Gleason, only for the fact that in the end, the essence of Taskmaster, even though it was called Taskmaster, is about the cast, less so about the Taskmaster. Totally. Really, there's like 5 minutes, 5 to 10 minutes in an episode that is actually the Taskmaster talking, whereas the real comedy comes from the cast.
I'll tell you what it comes from. Taskmaster is an exercise in editing. It is like comedy editing as a formula. There is something that the way they take that so must be so much raw footage and turn it into these beautifully ended and contrasted little segments with each challenge is honestly very impressive. They've been doing it for so long. It continues to be great. If you are not watching Taskmaster, you are denying yourself joy. That is my review. I watched Hocus Pocus 2, the long-awaited sequel to the family cult classic Hocus Pocus that scared the shit out of Liam as a child. It was fine. That's my review. It's like... Did you watch it, Paul?
I did, yeah.
What'd you think?
I found it very underwhelming.
It is underwhelming. That's definitely a good word for it. What was it that was underwhelming for you? Was it real feeling that just the Disney-ishness of it? I know that Hocus Pocus 1 wasn't like...
Yeah, look, the reason Hocus Pocus 2 was made was because of the gays. That film should have been camp as fuck. Yeah. Instead, it just felt like a watered-down kids' film. It felt cheap as well. Like, the special effects in the original were better than this one with technology that we have now. How the green screening looked 10 times worse.
You know why? Do you want to know why?
Because they didn't give a fuck?
Because every good VFX artist is working on MCU film. That's literally it. They just outsource. They get anyone in the world who can do that well. They're working on that because that's where all the money is. And the lower budget stuff just doesn't get the success that it should.
It just felt like Disney reaching a quota. Like, we need this amount of content. This is the IP we own.
Oh, it was a formula. It was like, we need something for Halloween. What's something everyone wants? What can we get that's affordable? How do we... Like, we just need people to subscribe for Disney Plus this month. It's December.
And it was
it's October.
Hit.
It's Halloween. So was it? Oh, shit.
Yeah, it was the most watched Disney Plus movie ever.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah. More than
Turning Red.
Yeah.
Boo.
More than Luca, more than Turning Red. Like,
it's hard to have faith in humanity sometimes. The
We watched it.
Can we talk spoilers for Hocus Pocus 2 very quickly? We don't want no spoilers for Hocus Pocus 2. I'm a bit annoyed they tried to pull a redemption arc on these women. That murder a child in the first movie, don't they?
Yeah.
Like, that's the whole thing. Seeing the origins of the girls, I understand. But then to try and, like, sort of undo the fact that they murdered children by making them, like, oh, they're the victims, really. It's like, okay, maybe that's true to some degree. Maybe they were persecuted because they were just women, but... They also murdered a child. Let's not undercut that, please.
That's the appeal of those characters, is that they're awful and they want to kill children. That's why gay people love those characters. Like, the film should have been about them trying to eat kids and sometimes succeeding. Like, that would have been a fun movie. but
and would have been scary, which was at Liam was petrified that movie for a reason, and
I don't think they really understood the appeal of what people love about the original.
Sure. A couple of days ago, out of nowhere, Studio Ghibli tweeted out like a 5-second video that just showed the Lucasfilm logo that then transitioned into the Studio Ghibli logo.
Turns out that was half the actual thing too.
And
how did I not know this?
And the world went fucking nuts speculating what this was. A lot of theories were that that Ghibli were going to do an episode of Star Wars Visions, which was already this like Star Wars anime thing. And then a couple of days later, there's a picture of a little baby Grogu, little baby Yoda, little figurine on a table. And in the background is the man himself, Miyazaki-san, just out of focus. And you're like, what the fuck is happening? What the fuck is this? Not long after that, it was announced that a short film had been made in secret, apparently, by Studio Ghibli, the most renowned anime studio in the world, a Star Wars short about Grogu called Zen, Grogu and the Dust Bunnies, and it was arriving just a day later on November 14th. Paul, have you watched Zen, Grogu and the Dust Bunnies? Did you know it existed?
I didn't know it existed. The thing is, I'm not on Twitter anymore. Yeah. So Smart-wise. I miss out on a lot.
Wise.
So I'm just blowing your mind here.
Studio Ghibli have produced and released on Disney Plus a Star Wars.
So if short. I log on Paul, right now.
Right I'm, now.
You can watch it. Can watch It'll it. Be right the first now. Thing you see at the top.
Right
it's,
now.
What?
It's ready. It's available right now,
You
Paul.
Know what? It only goes. It doesn't go for very long. We're going to pause the podcast. You can watch it right now. Paul.
Yeah.
You've now watched the masterful Studio Ghibli's Star Wars, surprise Star Wars short animated film. I just watched you in real time watch it. What are your thoughts?
It's cute, I guess.
I saw your face drop throughout that. You started so happy, and then by the end of it, you're just like, oh.
It's one of those things where, like, we didn't even know this thing existed a few days ago. Paul didn't know it existed until 5 minutes ago. And somehow, I have to admit, I did expect a little bit more than what we got. Like, even for something that doesn't have a marketing budget, it just came out of nowhere. It's a cute little surprise. When you tell me Studio Ghibli is making a Star Wars short, I was expecting a little more than that.
I expected more than a second-year animation student's final project.
Yeah. One interesting thing about it, the musical score...
Yes,
Ludwig Göransson.
But it very, very much felt inspired by the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Maybe it was.
I don't know if you guys... Have you guys actually ever watched that?
No. Yes, I have, yeah.
Yeah, like that...
I mean, once. I don't know if I paid that much attention to the score, but go on.
Yeah, there's like a scene where Chewbacca's child is watching like a hologram, like Cirque du Soleil thing.
Yes,
the music playing sounds exactly like that.
Ooh, interesting. Maybe it was a nod.
Yeah.
It sounds like you were whelmed.
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit, it went for 3 minutes and my mind started wandering.
Yeah.
It kind of baffles me why it exists. It's like, how did this come to be? Did Disney reach out to Ghibli? Did Ghibli reach out to Disney? Whose idea was it? Why was it made?
Why did it have to be Star Wars?
Whose idea was this and why did they think it was a good idea is my question. It's just a little baffling.
The only thing I can think of is that Ghibli will release like a collab merchandise range centered around it. Like when you're in Japan and you go
That's
to
a
any
heck
shop.
Of a good thought, yeah.
Like the Ghibli marketing machine, that animation studio is basically...
You can buy your Totoro plates, but you can also buy your Grogu plates as well. Yeah. You might be right about that.
The merchandise far outweighs the output of the studio at this point. Yeah,
I mean, they've now got that theme park, which is like, it's not even really a theme park. It's like you can walk through a forest and like into sets and stuff like that, including a life-size cat bus, which I definitely want to do.
Yeah, don't go into those stores, though, because it's just Totoro on repeat, and it really fucks with you.
That's true.
We went to Japan, and then we went like the second night, and then the rest of the trip was us going, Totoro, Totoro.
I'm not even sure I'd seen Totoro at that point, but that song was stuck in my head. Speaking of some good anime, I went and saw Dragon Ball Super Superhero, the latest animated Dragon Ball movie based on a sort of a spin-off of the most recent Dragon Ball series, Dragon Ball Super. What's interesting about Dragon Ball Super Superhero is that, apart from the horrendous title, is that it is it's 3D animated, which has appeared, little bits of 3D animation have appeared in the previous Dragon Ball movie, which was Dragon Ball Super Broly. But generally, it's always been majority 2D animated ever since the original Dragon Ball back in the day, all the way through Super. So it being done as a cel-shaded to look like anime, but obviously made with 3D models, was very, very controversial. And people had differing opinions on whether it'd be any good before it even came out. I went and saw it because it was centered on two of my favorite characters of the show. Are you guys fans of Dragon Ball? By the way, on any level,
I've watched episodes here and there, but
I watched those same 10 episodes that kept showing in repeat on Cheese TV when we were kids.
Sure, yeah. I was a fan of Dragon Ball Z. I haven't followed Super, but like all the way, particularly through from the beginning, through the multiple different dubs of the Saiyan saga and the Frieza saga I've seen, and through the Cell saga, the Android Saga, Cell saga. Big fan of that stuff. Gohan has always been one of my favorite characters. He was always done dirty post Cell Saga, and he got a movie where he got to shine alongside Piccolo. And I think it's the best of the Dragon Ball movies I've seen, from a storytelling point of view, from an entertainment point of view, from a comedy point of view, not from an action point of view necessarily. I think Super Broly is still like better animated from an action point of view, but like as a film that I wanted focused on some characters I really love, it really, really executed on very well, better than nearly any previous Dragon Ball movie has. Most Dragon Ball movies are like some weird offshoot of a previous villain shows up, they all have to fight it, they suck at fighting until Goku shows up and then they win, which is basically how arcs usually happen in the anime anyway. So to not have Goku and Vegeta feature in this and it's centered on Gohan, one of my favorite characters, and Piccolo, was really exciting. And most surprising, the 3D animation didn't suck, because I was convinced it was going to be crap, and I'd still prefer the 2D animation, but I certainly wasn't taken out of the movie by it being 3D animated with cel shading. It was actually quite effective for the most part, and I stopped thinking about it really early on and just enjoyed the movie for what it was. And it was a really fun cinema experience, actually. I don't see much anime at the cinemas very often. This movie did really well, apparently, everywhere except Japan. They didn't want to go see it because it was 3D animated, I think. But I had a really good time with it. And hopefully they do more stuff with Gohan and Piccolo in future movies or seasons of Dragon Ball, whatever they do next. Finally, before we get to our spoiler room, I have been playing a game called Marvel Snap, which is a phone game, which I don't play very often. It's a card-based phone game that's based around the Marvel comic characters. It's so goddamn fucking addictive. And it is one of those free-to-play games where you can like funnel money into it if you want to speed up progress and stuff like that. But at this point, at least, the progression is just good enough that I can play like a dozen games that take about 3 minutes in a day and do my dailies, and it's not asked demanding more of me. It just feels the right amount. It's very satisfying. It is consuming my life, and I may need an intervention if someone wants to help me with that, please. I'm reluctant to do phone games or free-to-play games, but a lot of people were talking about how good this game was, and it's legitimately really engrossing and very, very addictive, and just like from a strategy point of view, plus the right amounts of elements of luck, because it's you versing another person. Sometimes bots, particularly early on, but as you progress through the game, you start to play a lot of other people. It's genuinely like engrossing and addictive, and it's not that really like I'll just play one more, and that's 4 a.m. So everyone should and shouldn't play Marvel Snap is my advice.
Honey Season, sponsored by Marvel Snap.
If only, man. I would take that Marvel money in a heartbeat. All right. Very quickly, let's go to the spoiler room to discuss Black Panther Wakanda Forever.
You're now entering the spoiler zone.
We're all big Marvel fans here. We go see all the Marvel films at the movies, although I still haven't seen Werewolf by Night, I realize. I need to watch that soon. I've heard that's very good. What did you guys think of Black Panther Wakanda Forever, the sequel to Black Panther, the last film in Phase 4 of the MCU?
It felt long and quite unfocused. I didn't hate it, but I don't think it's anywhere near as strong as the original, and pretty weak ending to the phase, to be honest.
Liam?
I agree in most part. It felt like it could have had a script edit. It felt like it had pacing issues for me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think, and this is a spoiler room, yeah?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I don't think that Shuri as a leading character worked, but I understand where they got what they did with it. I don't think that she will continue to be the Black Panther in the MCU.
I mean, they've already given the escape hatch for her at the very end of the movie.
Exactly.
For someone else to take over as Black Panther if she doesn't want to be anymore.
And I'm excited by that prospect of that person being Black Panther. But look, I enjoyed it. It got the heart and the emotional side of it right for me. The action left me underwhelmed. And I don't know about you, Paul, but our screening of it was very, very dark, and it was hard to watch some of the scenes.
Particularly the stuff underwater, and then a lot of the stuff even before that. It was really, really weird how dark it was.
The stuff at night by the river or whatever, that was too dark.
Yeah,
the stuff
it was really hard to see.
I
don't remember being that fussed by that. Like, I don't think I was thinking, oh, this is really dark.
I don't think the film was filmed poorly. I think
the projection was shit.
But I think that the action was incomprehensible in terms of the way it was directed. Like, the action scenes weren't engaging, like, at all. It was all shaky cam, close-up bullshit.
I don't think it was shaky cam. It was just cutting too often. It was like, it didn't let anything linger. I don't think it was...
If it did, it was just slow-mo.
Yeah, that's right.
It was all just slow-mo. I think the big reason for me that I don't think that... I'm sorry, I don't know the actress's name.
Letitia Wright.
Sure. I don't think she could hold it up because as a leading actor, because she's sitting there in these scenes with like Angela Bassett and Michael B. Jordan, who are literally chewing the scenery in this movie and just... killing it with their performances, and then but you need to have a leading actor that can hold up the rest of that film, and it just didn't hit it for me, and it's unfortunate because the trailers had me from the beginning.
I think there's a reason it's called Wakanda Forever, and it's sort of like, while it's got to be Shuri is the new Black Panther, it was meant to be a bit broader than that. It was meant to be about there is no Black Panther for the majority of this movie. The Black Panther finally shows up in the last 20 minutes, basically, of the film. And the rest of the time, it's about dealing without having the Black Panther in Wakanda. So it is centered not just on Shuri, but it's centered on Angela Bassett's character. It's centered on Lupita Nyong'o's character. It's centered on all of them at once and on Namor. So it's kind of doing this ensemble type thing. And then Riri Williams is in there as like the second tier of that as well. It's deliberately trying to not make it about any one particular character as much as, say, the original was, or most superhero films are. But I agree with you that that doesn't necessarily make for a successful film. I think I
also think there's a whole plot point that could be removed. The whole storyline with Everett Ross and Julie Louise Dreyfus's character that added nothing.
I don't disagree, but it takes up all of about 4 minutes of the film. Like, even if you cut it, the film would still have a pacing problem and a length problem. It really doesn't take up any real estate in the film whatsoever. It's like three scenes that run for a minute each. It's really, really minor. But I agree, it didn't need to be there. And it has that problem of feeling like the sort of way they'd integrate storylines like they did back in, like,
Iron Man 2
and stuff like that. Yeah,
absolutely.
I think the biggest problem with this film is that it was being made on the run, that rather than slow down to let them figure out how to do this as best they could, when Chadwick Boseman died, they kept going at the same pace. This film released when it was meant to release. It released when it was originally announced, when they still had Chadwick attached to it. And so what is the strongest points of the film, which I mostly remember, are like the opening, which are really touching, which are directly conflating like Chadwick Boseman's death with T'Challa's death in the film. The effect that has on the characters, I like the character of Namor. I liked the emotional climaxes of the characters. I loved the scene where Michael B. Jordan's Killmonger showed up. I gasped when I realized it was him. They did a really good job of making me think it was going to be Angela Bassett, and then it was him. I thought it was fucking unreal when I got him back for that bit. But it's like the Hobbit films, which were sort of made on the run. It's knows sort of kind of what storyline was meant to be. But because it's not written to be sharp, but sort of just make it happen as it goes, it's just a bit shaggy all the way through, and they didn't do a good job of condensing it down to something that was as engaging as it should have been. It's got lots of good elements, but it doesn't add up to a product that's nearly as good as the original, as you said, which is so much better focused. But also because it had the time to be focused, and it was centered around a very charismatic main actor in a very interesting world that we'd never been to before. But I didn't dislike it. I still think it's one of the better films of this phase. It's better than Black Panther. Sorry, it's better than Black Widow. It's weird that they were sort of bookended, those films, Black Widow and Black Panther, I think about. Do I like it more than Thor, Love and Thunder?
I didn't. I thought Thor was a lot more fun than this.
It's certainly more fun.
I rewatched Thor before this, actually, and yeah, I didn't like it as much as Thor.
I think Shang-Chi is definitely a better film overall,
mm-hmm.
but it hasn't stuck with me that much either. I think my favorite this phase has been Doctor Strange: The Multiverse of Madness, which might seem nuts, but it's the only one I've watched twice. Because I just found it that entertaining. But that speaks to the problem with Phase 4, where so much of it has not felt like it's amounted to a whole lot. And that is difficult. It's just difficult when we've come off building, stakes, and characters and relationships building to get to a point. We had that amazing emotional climax in Endgame. And Spider-Man Far From Home was great this phase as well.
No Way Home.
But yeah, it doesn't feel like it's amounting to anything yet, because it's not coming together in a particularly cohesive way. Loki really is the best part of this phase.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
In terms of execution as a complete product, I think it's the strongest from start to finish, and emotionally is the most interesting. With WandaVision in second, and then probably Spider-Man and
Multiverse,
and then I'd probably put Wakanda Forever and Shang-Chi on the next tier, and then Thor Love and Thunder. No, Thor Love and Thunder maybe does go above. That's a shame to say. The more I think about it, the more I think that Wakanda Forever is like in the bottom tier of this
I really especially hope that, well, they should really be hoping that their next film, which I think is Ant-Man, right?
Quantumania.
Yeah, that film has to be a giant. Like, it has to be a hit with critics and audiences, because I think the word of mouth for Wakanda Forever has not been great.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everybody's having the same issues.
You could feel it in the audience too. There were some people at our screening, because we were seeing it the first night, who wanted to applaud at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt them like wanting to. Obviously, they were very attached to Chadwick Boseman and this character. But the majority of like the people I was seeing next to my left, you could tell were ready to go home by the time the film was over.
Yeah, my audience was restless as fuck.
Yeah.
There were people walking in and out and talking. And Namor, when you saw him with his wings on his ankles and stuff, got a giant laugh out of the audience. Like,
that didn't happen
I think people found that character design to be really goofy, which I don't think was the intended effect. So, and I like, he wasn't a particularly engaging villain.
I think it was charismatic, but I don't know. I found the ending very convenient between him and Shuri. Like, you're getting to this point where you're basically attacking another country and it outright, like, war, killing each other on the ship in the middle of the ocean. They're like, no, it's cool, guys. We're cool. And, like, it just wasn't a particularly satisfying conclusion. And the action just wasn't.
And some of the CGI was pretty rough, I found.
That was the same with...
That's the problem with
the original Black Panther.
Yeah.
That final fight in Black Panther was not good.
That's true. I don't think the action's any better than the original Black Panther. I just think T'Challa and Killmonger are just a much... And that story is... It's just so much more focused. It knows exactly what it wants to do. It's built purposefully to be not just engaging story for these characters, but an engaging discussion about a lot of different things when it comes to like black culture, particularly in America, and like colonizers and all this sort of stuff. This film, while it's meditating on grief for the 8 millionth time in this phase of the MCU, and it may be in a more explicit and like personal way that the audience is going to engage with just because of the real world death of Chadwick Boseman, it's just not a compelling story, unfortunately, or a compelling movie from start to finish. It has its moments. It grabbed me here and there. I don't think it's overall bad, but it's... Yeah.
Did it make you excited for Ironheart?
It didn't make me unexcited. I liked Riri Williams quite a bit.
I think she was underused.
Yeah, she was fine. She was... I made me interested to see if Angela Bassett gets a Oscar nomination for a performance, because she really was that good. I'll tell you what, actually, I remember now what my favorite part of Phase 4 was. It was the teaser trailer for Black Panther Wakanda Forever. I am not kidding. That thing is one of the best trailers ever made. That is that somehow 2.5 minutes like resonates in you. The combination of the cinematography, because a lot of the cinematography when it's not action is beautiful. Like, Ryan Coogler knows how to shoot a great frame and get great performances, plus Angela Bassett's performance, plus the music. That is a fucking unreal trailer that the movie could never live up to.
Agreed.
Even I wasn't all that impressed by Ludwig Göransson's score in Black Panther Forever.
He might be pulled too thin at the moment.
Yeah, well, you know, he already made the best soundtrack of the year with Turning Red anyway, so...
Zen, Grogu, and the Dust Bunny.
Good point. All right, let's leave it. Anything else you guys want to say about Black Panther?
Just that this episode is the same length as the movie.
Are we... Finally, we talk about this all the time, and we've tried to talk about our feelings about the MCU and, like, where it's going, and are we still excited about it? Are we worried about where Marvel's going with this? Are we worried about burnout? Are we there yet? Is this...
Look, I don't have the burnout. Like, I will keep watching. But I'm worried for the wider community, because all I'm hearing from everyone else is, I think I can't be bothered with Marvel anymore.
Yeah.
And that's worrying when they've, you know, built this so much content coming out. What's going to happen if everyone stops watching it? Like, do they just stop?
The major problem they have at the moment is that just people don't care about the current focus of characters.
Hmm.
Except, I guess people really cared about Scarlet Witch, and then they wisely, in my eyes, made her a villain, but kind of somehow like alienated the audience that loved Wanda in doing so.
I think
Loki season 2 might get people back in.
I think the character people care most about is Spider-Man, and they don't have control of that character.
Spider-Man, they've killed Wanda for now. Loki, who's on Disney Plus only, not in the movies right now. Yeah, I don't know how... Don't think people care about Ant-Man. Mm. Make a Hulk movie? People give a shit about Bruce Banner.
Mm. Maybe this Blade movie will be amazing.
Well, it's been delayed. We don't even know when that's coming out anymore.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. I'll keep watching, but I am... Oh, Guardians. Guardians 3. That's what will get people. If any movie is going to get people to care again, it'll be Guardians 3.
Mm.
That's their make or break.
Yeah, if they screw the pooch with that one,
or Guardians 3, fucked. Then we're in real big trouble, I think.
Agreed.
Big trouble. Yeah. All right. Thanks, guys, for being on this ginormous episode of Topic Hot Topic for staying so late. I appreciate you jumping at the last minute. Liam, thank you again. Paul, what's happening with your Swapcast podcast at the moment?
So our last episode was a teen comedy called Super Cool, which took the plot of Super Bad and then put a body swap in it for no reason at all. So that's a fun listen. We listen to us rip it apart. Our next episode is going to be a Christian body swap called The Big Fix, which apparently is extremely incest heavy. So that should be fun.
Cut that for the trailer.
Because it's about like a family of four, a mum, dad, brother and sister. The dad becomes the son becomes the dad, mum becomes the daughter becomes the mum. And I feel like people have sex. And it's a Christian movie. Yeah. So I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. This is why I hear from like the reviews and stuff that I've read in preparation for the episode. So, yeah,
I'm excited to hear about it.
Yeah,
me too.
If you love incest, then listen to the Swapcast podcast.
Excellent. All right, thanks everyone for listening. We'll see you next time with our review of House of the Dragon. That's coming next week, hopefully. Bye for now.
Bye.
Goodbye, everybody.
Absolutely.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.